This is the Faith Ventures Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, telling stories of Christians doing business for the glory of God. If you appreciate this program, support the nonprofit work of LCI by donating at libertarianchristians.com/donate. And if you'd like to share your story, contact us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. Welcome back to Faith Ventures. This is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. I'm Dr. Norman Horn, and today I am joined by the one and only Juan Acosta. He is the CEO and founder of Tabella and a co-founder with the only Catholic Angel Network out there. And I am excited to have him here. We've had some great conversations in lead up to this. Juan, welcome to the show. I'm glad to have you.
Well, I'm super excited to be here. Thanks for bringing me along. And hopefully we spend a few good minutes here and sharing some good things.
That's right. And I'm so thankful to be able to get to know you. It's been a joy and a pleasure. Let's start off really with kind of how you came to be the Juan Acosta of today. Your career is storied and interesting. And so let's kind of delve into that. How would you describe how you got to where you are with Tabella and the Angel Network?
God has done a lot of things in my life. And so I credit everything to him.
Yeah.
But I can kind of cover a little bit of just like the trajectory and wherever God takes me next and the things that we're doing is, let's see what he's got in stores. But I'm always amazed by what he's done with me and my life and my family's life. But I'll give a brief. I was born in Venezuela and I moved to the U.S. when I was about 9 years old. And one of the best things that's happened, honestly, the best gift that God has given me, one of the best gifts that and my family has given me. You know, we went from being, I'd say, poor because, you know, many times, you know, we didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we were in massive debt. I remember, I'll give an example, and God gave us a lot of things back then, but McDonald's, which now, you know, I get to partake in
whatever we want.
Maybe more than I should. But back then, it was a thing that, you know, my parents would save up money to take me on my birthday as a little kid.
Oh,
and yeah. I remember clearly that it wasn't a thing where they could eat in that moment. It was just me eating, you know, a Happy Meal or, you know, if it was a different place. But, you know, that's kind of like the contrast of where we were living. And then my dad, as an entrepreneur and, you know, someone that really wanted to give us the very, very best, as most fathers do, you know, he got us to the United States. And so that was a huge shift for my mom, my dad, my sister and I. And so when we got here, it was a big difference in how we were living, and it was a humble job that he had. But over time, he started a company after getting laid off. And I remember seeing his entrepreneurial journey and how he built a business without knowing a single word of English, yet having, you know, tons of English-speaking people just working for him. And so that was really awesome to see. And but he got sick. You know, he developed this neuromuscular disease. And I learned a lot about just business in general at that time, about people. A lot of people took advantage of him in that moment. And I dropped out of school. I was studying aerospace engineering. You know, I had this mindset on this career and had to drop out and went from doing that to working at a flower shop. And I can go into those stories. But my life shifted. And so my family and I had a lot of different challenges, health, financial. There were some very big things that happened there. For many years, it just seemed like everything was in complete opposition of what we were trying to do. And even immigration-wise, we had a lot of challenges with immigration. But in that, I saw many miracles in my life. And so God took me through twists and turns, and I started getting into product. I just said yes to any opportunity that I could see, and it was to provide for my family. I wasn't a student anymore. I was just working to help my family. I became, I'd say, the main breadwinner at home for quite a long time. And I think that experience helped me mature quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Things that maybe at that age, you're not thinking about, and people think later in life when they have a family and trying to provide for them. But overall, those challenges really developed me into, I would say, who I am today. In terms of career or work, it's been a lot of cool things. I went through all sorts of things. I started little businesses, nothing massive, but always entrepreneurial, always wanting to do things and take up opportunities. Somehow I ended up in California, in Silicon Valley, after watching a show by this seemingly like crazy guy. His name's Tim Draper. And I can say that because, you know, that's what he's very optimistic, crazy, big ideas. He had a show and I used to watch it with my dad during one Christmas. And I said, I want to go there. But it was impossible for us at the time. You know, it was not possible whatsoever. And my dad just pushed me to go for it. And so I ended up in Tim Draper's accelerator, pre-accelerator. Some people call it a people accelerator. And I went through as a student and I just knew, and I was incubating kind of an idea that I had, and that didn't pan out. But I just said, I need to stay in this atmosphere. I need to stay in this ecosystem. And so I started volunteering, moving chairs. I said, I'll stay here. I dropped out of school for a second time once I you know, was able to get back in it and I was paying for it and all these crazy things. But anyway, I started as a volunteer moving chairs just because I wanted to be there in proximity to what Silicon Valley is, right? You know, great ideas, lots of optimism. And I just started climbing the ladder. And so I became Tim Draper COO for his school, which is, don't ask me how, I just worked hard and God, you know, put me there for a reason. And, you know, I climbed that. And then I started, I told him, like, I want to invest in the entrepreneurs that we train. And he gave me the opportunity to launch a small venture fund within the university or within the accelerator. And I learned a lot there. And so what I always say is that people think that I was teaching the entrepreneurs and I trained over 700 of them in my time there. But really the big secret here is that I was learning from all of them, from all sorts of things, all sorts of walks of life, different parts of the world. And, you know, they thought they were learning from me, but really I was just learning from each and every one of them. And then after that, I had this miraculous moment dealing with something with my immigration status, just completely, there's no other words other than miraculous. And I was able to stay in this country after 20 years of constantly moving from visa to visa, always doing things by the book. And
right.
And finally, God stamped that seal of approval from the government to be able to stay here. And that was a big moment. And I went off right after that to start Tabella. Tabella today is a seemingly simple product. It's what we call an app for your Catholic community. You can pray on it. You can receive your church announcements. But really, the big mission or vision behind it is we're building an operating system for the church. And really, from a mission perspective, is about bringing the world to the sacraments. That's really what we live by. So that product might shift. We've got different things coming out in the next few months, but the mission will always stay the same, which is to bring the world to the sacraments. In my journey there, and happy to cover it, if you know, I raised money for this company, you know, gone through several rounds of funding for it, and I look back as to what I needed when I was starting, and that's how the idea for this Catholic Angel Network came about, which we're rebranding right now, but you can find all the information online. But we have an angel network of Catholic individuals, business people that, you know, have some sort of wealth, that are accredited investors. And we are finding great Catholic entrepreneurs. And it doesn't have to be a faith tech business that they're building. In fact, the two companies we funded last year are not faith tech businesses. They are, you know, in our world doing great things. However, the foundation, the founder itself, lives by the Catholic values. And it's this interaction between who are your supporters and where that money comes from, with an entrepreneur that has the faith at the core of what they're building. And yeah, we can chat a little bit about that if that's interesting.
Well, I do find it interesting. I mean, I think a lot of folks don't have a real good idea about what angel investing really is kind of about. So that might be something to kind of unpack in a bit. But I do want to kind of seize upon a couple of things from your past and just either get you to unpack that a little more or just, you know, expand, I suppose, a little bit. Like, I think it's interesting, for instance, that you really took charge of your own education, for instance. And the fact that you identified being with Tim Draper as being a crucial part of what you needed to do in order to become the kind of businessman technologist that you are in it today. I mean, even abandoning, if you will, maybe that's the wrong word, but you're a two-time dropout, man, and yet you're doing what you're doing. That's incredible. I mean, that's really amazing. Like, you know, in my own world and background. I mean, I'm a chemical engineer myself, right? So that's all of my education. And I was pretty, you know, dedicated to it, right? You know, from zero to hero, if you will. But you chose one path and then chose another. What were some of the, like, if you don't mind, like kind of unpack, what were some of the difficult parts about like wrestling with making some of those big decisions? How did you go about doing that? And what would you encourage our fellow brothers and sisters as to if they're having troubles thinking about where they're going in their education and whatnot, what sorts of things should they be thinking about in terms of either making a shift or sticking with it, perhaps?
Sure. Well, the first time that I dropped out was not out of my own. It was just life. You know, my dad had to close his business. It was after my first year of college. And here I had this awesome scholarship to an incredible school, number one in aerospace. And like, it was awesome. And then all of a sudden in the summer vacation, things happened with my dad. He got sick, a lot of things in his business. And then, you know, I told my friends like, oh, I'll see you, you know, in the fall. And I never came back. And so it was like a thing that it was, you know, just truly necessary and just life happened and circumstances happened. But I just, you know, went and I can unpack that a bit too. Now, the second time was actually out of my own, you know, I was 3.5 years in. I think I had one semester to go before graduating as an aerospace engineer. Huh. Actually, one or two semesters. One of the things I noticed for me, and this is on my personal side there, I've always had an interest either in philosophy, theology, just learning about God and integrating it in some way. And back then, I wasn't the practicing person that I should have been. But it was always an interest, right? And I remember speaking to a counselor at the second school I went to, and they're like, no, you can't take this. I think it was Theology 101 or whatever the naming was. You can't take it because then you won't graduate in time. And that for me was like, well, this is the education I also want. Like, sure, I'm a great engineer. I want to do these things. But there's a depth here that I want to dive into that's, to me, it was important at the time. Now it's the most important thing. So it started interfering a little bit with the true education I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, there was this opportunity of, hey, why don't I stop school for a bit, go off to Silicon Valley in this incredible opportunity at the moment and just see what it is. It was like a 7-8 week program. So it wouldn't have been catastrophic, just delay everything by one semester. But once I got there, I just discovered a whole world that just the people, they're thinking and building things. And that attracted me a lot. And I just didn't want to go back. And in a way, I already knew that I didn't want to be, say, the typical engineer at a firm. I've always just wanted to be at the start of things and creating things. And I had a passion for business. And I think a lot of that just came from necessity of having to provide for our family every single month and just coming up with new ways of making money so we could pay rent the next month. And so on my side, looking back, sure, it may seem like I took this decision, but throughout it, it was just a world of chaos and prayer, really. I mean, my family, I wasn't as prayerful back then myself, but I had a lot of people in my community praying for me. Mm. And really, that's where Tabella is kind of born, at this concept of community and what that truly means. I had so many people praying for me, rosaries and having different devotions that they would just dedicate for what was happening to me and my family, my dad's health, our finances, me not being able to go to school again. And so I'd like to, you know, paint the story of, oh, like I took these decisions, but really it was the circumstances that we needed to go through and just adapting as we went. And God was very good, even though at the moment I felt, you know, the first time I had to drop out of school, I went through like a depressive state, I would say. I don't even want to label it, but it was just a time of, here were all my friends graduating and doing these things. And here I was cutting flowers at a flower shop. And not that there's anything wrong with that or bad with it. But back then as a young person, that wasn't what I had set out to do. And so there was this big shift in life, but then that led into incredible things. And so just very thankful for it. If I could go back, I don't think I'd change anything, other than just be more mindful of God being present throughout every step of the way.
That's so cool. So the story is just interesting in and of itself. you said something there that I think is really interesting. And so I want to frame this next part with that in mind. And it's about creating Tabella. Mm-hmm. And what you noted there was that people were praying for you. You had the sense of community. And this kind of began to inspire something that now, I guess, is turning into Tabella. Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of unpack that even a little more.
Sure.
You're the mastermind behind this project. You've got this background that's informing it. What were some of the other influences or ways in which you, like, what developed that mission that how to where now you say we're developing the OS for the church, you will? Like, this is very curious because I wonder even internally, it's like, wow, you know, even in my own church tradition, there is a diffusiveness at times, especially congregation to congregation, and it's happened more over time.
What is it different?
Whereas the internet could help us in that. Yeah. How did you envision this? And like, what's your thought process there?
We named it Tabella like recently, right? A few years ago. But back then I was just thinking of this church app. I would sit in mass and maybe wrong of me, but honestly, the inspiration came during mass. If I go back when I was like 17, 18, maybe 16, you know, I would sit there and I would be just enthralled by the bulletins. In the Catholic Church, there's these bulletins on paper.
Sure.
And I would just be in the back. You know, there's these like local businesses and these are people from the community. And so really it sparked there. Mm-hmm. Looking back and connecting all the dots. My first job that was offered to me when I wasn't able to legally work, there was this young business, or it was a flower shop. It was a lady that delivered flowers to our church, and she was part of our church. That was the first opportunity that got extended to me. Very humble job, but very a lot of dignity in it, right? Like, she didn't want to just give me money, or we've never asked anyone for money, but it was a, hey, here's an opportunity, come work with me, even if it was not what I imagined or whatever it was. That was the first time. The second time is this tech entrepreneur within the church. He wasn't so techy, but he had a distribution business for video games. And he said, hey, you're young, you need work. Why don't you come work with me? And we'll find something, like do our website or social media, all these things. And then in there, I started doing other things. But that was another gentleman from my church, a very devout person that gave a lot to the church. And there were a few cases like that. Same for my dad, going to, even now when he goes to his doctor's appointments, the people that drive him and offer to drive him are people from the church. And so now it makes sense to me. But back then I was seeing all these things and, you know, maybe I was just caught up in the why is this happening to us? And I was missing truly like that God's hand was there, that no matter if there was suffering, that he was sending us people to really be with us, right? And sometimes in suffering, there's not a solution to solve something, but you just need someone to be there with you, right? And that's what Jesus does, right? He walks with us. Mm-hmm. And we take up our little tiny versions of what the cross is, and he just walks with us and we walk with him. So now though, you know, when I got exposed to the world of technology, building businesses, thinking big, that's something that I really give a lot of credit to Tim Draper for. I had the pleasure of meeting with him weekly, which is, you know, a lifetime opportunity. You don't get that with that level of person. And so we would meet weekly because I was leading his school, or many times during the week. And the biggest thing he taught me was to think big, to think really, really big, and optimism. I think that's just something that I got from him in the way that he moved around in the things he was doing. So thinking big. And so I started seeing, you know, I had this reversion to the faith. And this reversion to the faith was me kind of like locking in the emotional side of what I learned from a Hispanic Catholic family, of the different devotions, like all that made sense in my heart. But in my brain, I still, you know, the logical side of me, it's like, why do I believe what I believe? And so I started diving into scriptures, diving into, you know, the church fathers, and everything started clicking. So I had this reversion where I became more practicing than I was before. And that's always a journey, right? Like, I'm always falling short of what I'm called to do. But that's when I realized, hey, the church was the center of the world for, you know, the past 2,000 years. It's just recently that it really doesn't get seen as that, but it was the center of commerce, center of business, center of family life, center of like media, art, scientific discovery, like all these things revolved around the church. And all of a sudden, It's just a thing that people maybe do sometimes on Sundays now.
Yeah.
And so it lost that element in the core of who we are. And so, you know, what if we could bring back the elements of that and help the church in many ways? And so I think from a community perspective, the community's there, they're helping one another, they're trying to do things for one another. What would it look like to facilitate a lot of those things and really bring the world closer to the sacraments? And so that's where it started developing. And then as I started kind of studying the industry from a, what are the other softwares out there? What's happening, or what are people building in it? You notice that a lot of things were super outdated. So first we just got to kind of catch up from a tools perspective, but then that leads into, hey, if this product was in the hands of every, you know, churchgoer, of every Catholic, or even if they just go once a year, but for some reason they have our product, what would it look like to bring them into community that they could experience some of the things that I experienced back then of, hey, my first job came from someone from the community. You could post something and say, hey, I need help getting to the doctor. Like, what would it look like to do those things? And then it just started developing from there. By the way, I call it the operating system of the church because it's not just the community product. That's really like the entry point to everything. But we're building products and services on top of it that can unlock the value that's there that normally we go to secular things for. So I'll give you an example. We've developed, and it's coming out in a few months, a debit card for Catholics.
Oh, wow.
We won't do credit because that there's a moral thing there. Yeah. We don't have to dive into it, but debit is, you know, debit. So what would it look like instead of going to Chase or Wells Fargo or whatever other bank, but what would it look like to have a banking system that's in a way Catholic, that every time you purchase anywhere, a little part of that transaction that would have normally gone to the banks or the different layers within banking, that some of that could go back to your parish or could go back to your Catholic organization you want to support. And so that's what I mean by unlocking the value that's there, that us as Christians, we're taking elsewhere because, you know, the modern world has given us all these tools all around. But what would it look like to build products around this that could benefit the church directly? And so that's why we call it the operating system.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, so you're taking these elements of community and augmenting them with things that can help lift people up. I think that's just, that's really cool. I mean, I wish you all the success in that, of course. And I hope that expands even beyond to others as well. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. It's harder than, you know, you can say all of that, but it is very hard to build for the church. And, you know, I'll tell you just a little anecdote. I thought, you know, here I was, I quit my really comfy job. You know, we're building a team and we're like, hey, we are going to go build for the church. The church, you know, as an organization, as like the parishes or the diocese, they're going to just welcome us and want to like meet with us every week and build with us. And one thing happened, which was a pandemic. We started doing it during that. So every church closed. And so that was almost practically impossible there. But yes, I mean, the there's a mindset also within the faith or the institutions that has just been there and prevents a little bit of that innovation. So that was a little bit hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand why. It's not a complaint. It's more of a, it's been difficult, but we are in a stage now that, you know, we've been able to do some great things across hundreds of churches. Dioceses are trusting us. They're opening doors and it's just, it's the right time for it. I think we just had to go as a team through, you know, this period of God asking us, are you really serious about this? And those are just the challenges of building things in any market per se.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that kind of leads to an interesting question, because I think the church historically, no matter where you come from, does have a bit of a, shall we say, a lag to introduce new technologies at times. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? We don't want to be constantly trying to re-innovate and reinvent the church, because that's not what we're there for. We're there to provide, you know, a continuity between the men and women of faith of old and what's going on right now in the present. And, you know, even it's been said that theology is a conversation about God between the living and the dead, even. And that's something that can happen between Christians from everywhere. And that's why it's important that we listen to each other, listen to those other perspectives and so on. But as it pertains to kind of technology and how do we incorporate that, it's not just like, well, we're putting in a microphone where it just makes somebody, you know, a little more easy to hear or something to that effect. But you're, you know, I'm curious as to your experience. Like you noted how there was a little bit of resistance, and that's understandable. But how do you go about explaining some of these things to your fellow Christians and either persuading them that this is worth adopting or whatever needs to kind of happen there to get them to think a little differently? What other misconceptions Sure. have you seen in this respect?
You know, when in the world of startups and in angel investors or venture capitalists, there's always a question that they ask companies. A lot of them ask this, which is why now? Like, why couldn't this exist 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Like, why now? Why are we building this now? Why didn't it exist before? Why should it, you know, maybe wait? And for what we were building, actually, before the pandemic, there was probably no need, or there was a need, but it wasn't recognized from the clergy or within the church, because we do things and we get used to, okay, like people come on Sunday or every day for mass, or, you know, this is how we operate. The bulletins are there, et cetera. But then during the pandemic was the why now of, hey, our communities got completely lost. Like we had to close the doors of the church. And if I wanted to send them a message, they were all scattered. Sure, I might have a Facebook profile that some of them are there, some are on email chains, some are, but it just got completely, the community that took hundreds of years to build just vanished.
Yeah.
You know, couldn't have them percentually. And so the why now became very evident. Like we need a space where as Catholics, we can be together no matter what's happening around it. And then there's a growing sentiment also, and I'm not exactly sure if I'm answering your question, but there's a growing sentiment within the Christian community. And you see it as, you know, the platforms that are out there, such as Facebook, et cetera, they might be great tools for, I would consider evangelizing to the world and spreading our message. But when it comes to nurturing a community, it's something really weird that, you know, the churches from whatever denomination, it's like, hey, follow us on Facebook. We're sending our community to go on there. Yes. And then they run into a bunch of, pardon the language, crap, you know, different organizations trying to target Christians. And it's just not a space to really nurture in faith. And so,
There's risk too, right?
There's risk.
Those platforms.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so there was a, you know, we needed a space to bring these communities and that it really revolved, that it was a clean space. When you open Tabella, it's about prayer. It's about what's going on in my church, about finding a group to join and to bring you in person to whether it's just an event or hopefully to the mass, or hopefully you can schedule a confession, or really bring the people closer to the sacrament itself.
That's really interesting. And like, it just sparks ideas even in my own mind about like, what could we do, you know, in other churches as well. And that's really interesting. So kudos to you for taking the step of faith and trying to figure this out.
Thank you.
That's awesome. We're running low on time here. I want to make sure we honor the time that you've given to us here. But what I want to do before we kind of close out is, you've reflected on a bunch of different things already with this last half hour. As you kind of think back on your time as an entrepreneur, someone growing in faith, and you've had such tremendous experiences in the past, both with the family and beyond, that have both challenged you and helped you to grow, what's something that you might say you'd want to like give advice to your younger self, if you will? If go back in time, tell your younger self, like, you know, one, this is what you need to know. This is what you need to be focusing on. This is kind of a question that I hope will help inform our younger viewers, especially as we help them to grow in faith and look toward their future in their career and as a person of faith, you know, hopefully throughout their life.
Yeah, I think about this often, which is I did not have Christ at the center of everything that I did. And back to your thing about mindset within, you know, like your previous question, it's, there's this desire to try to separate faith and church is over here and this is my work and I do my work over here. Now I would say that I'm living a way more integrated life of the faith is at the core of everything I do. It's how I do everything, whether I'm cutting flowers or whether I'm creating a technology company or whether I'm just hanging out with a friend. It's like, it's at the core of everything. And that's something a lot of young people and myself included did not have. You know, we got distracted by the flashy things of the world, or, you know, like what school or, you know, what job are you going to get and all these things. And more now I see that people have removed God from the equation. He's always there. You know, he is the equation, but we just don't recognize it, and they've removed him from it. And I think if I could go back in some way, it would be to do that, because everything would be a lot easier. Maybe nothing would have changed in terms of certain outcomes or different challenges that I had to go through. Who knows, right? But it would have been a lot easier. Recently, I just went through a really low time with certain things not too long ago, related to a bunch of things, personal, business, all these things all of a sudden piled up. It kind of lined up with Lent. So I kind of offered that up as my little tiny way of suffering with Christ in some way. But I lived very peacefully through that. I was actually very impressed with myself. It's really God that's, you know, I go to Eucharistic adoration, you know, when you sit in front of the Eucharist and you just sit with the Lord for a bit every day. And that's given me a lot of peace. I wish I could be doing that in the most challenging times back then with my family. I saw my mom and my dad do it. And that's why I think they're so peaceful and have taught me and my sister incredible things. But if I could go back, I think it would be that. I would have, you know, career, things that happen, whatever happens, but that God would have been at the center, that prayer would have been at the center. You know, now with our team, for example, every time, either if I talk to someone that's not Christian, that's Christian, believing, not believing, whatever it is, I always just ask, hey, can we start with a quick prayer? Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have done those things back then. And especially as a younger person, to have that boldness, I think you could transform people's hearts. Even you imagine like a 17-year-old, you know, in school or going into their first job and saying something as bold as like, hey, before we start this meeting, do you mind if we just say a quick prayer and invite the Holy Spirit to where we are right now? Oh man, I think that would just transform hearts tremendously. And so just, I could go back, put God at the center of everything I do and not just the separation of this is work, this is school, this is faith, this is my church, but really bring all of it around him and that he's at the core of everything.
Love it. And that's something we all, you know, can be challenged to hear and to put into practice, is that we shouldn't forsake the meeting of the saints. We need to keep the Lord at the center of our lives. So thank you for that encouragement. And I hope that everybody hears that. Juan, before we go, let's just make sure everybody knows where they can find you online. If you would, let's talk about, you know, any URLs or whatnot that we can share to learn more about Tabella, about Catholic Angels, if necessary, and if they can want to connect with you.
Awesome. Yeah. So Tabella, easy. Tabella.app. Tabella is with two L's. It's a Latin word. So that's where you can find everything there. Would encourage just to send us feedback and help us build. On the Angel Network side, you can visit catholicangels.co and learn more there about the partners that I've built this with and, you know, what we're funding and things there. So would love to meet great entrepreneurs that have faith at the center of things. And just personally, you could always just look me up on LinkedIn, Juan Acosta, type in Tabella on it, and you'll find me there, and would love to connect if there's anything that I could do to help anyone here in any way.
All right. Well, thank you, Juan. This has been a joy and a pleasure to talk with you, and it's been great getting to know you. So thank you so much once again for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been Faith Ventures. We will see you next time.